This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, this is Will. Welcome to the latest reaction show, and today I'm joined with Dylan Hells from Wrestling Culture. And Dylan, last time we watched a TNA pay-per-view, I vowed it was going to be my last one. I said, no more of this shit. I can't take it. But I lied. I feel like if we're on Place to Be Nation and a company's doing a pay-per-view, I feel, at least an American company, I feel it should be in the channel's best interest that we at least attempt to do as many wrestling shows as possible. So we're on round two, but the sad thing is you and I are the only ones sick enough to actually watch this show. What's going on?
Well, you know, I got to say I'm a little disappointed that other people weren't committed to this. First of all, on paper, the card did not look all that bad. To be honest. But secondly, you know, I gotta admit, in fairness, that this was kind of on a whim that I decided to do this, but I do agree with you that it's good to cover as much of this stuff as we can, good, bad, or ugly. And, to be honest, after nearly drowning in raw sewage and trash a couple hours ago, this TNA pay-per-view really wasn't that bad.
No,
comparison. So
I agree. We'll talk about that. But let's get on to the matches. So the first match was DJ Zema Ion versus Manic versus Andrew Everett versus Tigre Uno in an Ultimate X title match. And I know when I was talking to you earlier, you didn't get to see the match, and I was like, dude, watch the replay, you know, package that they show at the end of the match, and you will see every big spot in the match and know exactly what happens. Because that's what this match was. It was a big collection of high spots. Everybody looked good hitting their high spots. And then at the end, Tigre Uno wins, but it looks like he was legitimately hurt. And then after the match, Gregory Helms comes out and did nothing. But whatever. I don't know, man. I think these matches are kind of passe, but the crowd was into it. I'm kind of tired of these Ultimate X matches. What about you?
I'm not. I just think it's a bad gimmick to begin with. Like, I think it's funny. It's a gimmick that I think the intention behind the gimmick is that it there's no restrictions and you can do all this crazy stuff. But the funny thing is, I actually think it is restricting because yes, you get the crazy spots, and you know, I saw the clips of this, and I actually saw the last couple minutes of it. But the reality is, the matches like this tend to be so much focus on going for the X and trying to climb that fucking contraption that even by the standards of a spot test, there's a lot of stuff that you can't really do. You know, it's like almost like it's a distraction from the focus of the spots. So I agree with you that as a gimmick, if it ever was relevant, you know, it probably was something that should have been retired a long time ago. That said, the clips that I saw looked good, you know, and a little bit I saw at the end looked good. I think Andrew Everett's a really great talent. It seemed like, he kind of may have been a little bit of a show stealer in this match. I almost hate that he's in TNA because it's a waste of a guy who's a good young talent in a lot of ways. But, on the other hand, maybe it'll help him get, you know, a little bit of extra money from independent wrestling promoters, which, you know, good on him if it does. But, yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to say other than I agree with you that this is probably a gimmick that's past its point. And Gregory Helms coming out was really, I mean, I know they were in Charlotte, but it was just really kind of an odd thing. I guess the point was to endorse the TNA version of the X Division title because our cruiserweight title, because he's the longest reigning cruiserweight champion, I guess. But I don't really get what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I don't know, man. To me, he's another guy who should just kind of fade away into the sunset. He's had his time. In a weird way, this whole show was like the Omega tribute show. you know.
Yeah. So,
you know, which I'm fine. I like Omega, but it was kind of weird like that. And everyone looked good in this match, including my boy DJ Z-Mion, you know, and Tigre Uno. I mean, they all looked good. So, you know, props to them for at least hitting their spots and doing some crazy dives, because a lot of times these things can turn ugly real quick, like with the belt falling down or whatever. So I think this was okay. This next match, we're going to actually talk about for a while, because instead of kind of going over the match, because the match was really not very good, I want to run down the individual people who are in the match, and then we'll talk about individuals in the match. I don't think we're going to talk about everybody unless you bring up a name I don't bring up, but I do want to talk about some people that made impressions on me, good and bad. So we have one of my least favorite wrestlers, Mr. Anderson, versus Jesse Godders, versus Al Snow, versus Eli Drake, versus O'Shea, I don't know his first name, versus Robbie E, versus She-Ra, I don't know his first name either, versus Tyrus, versus Chris Melendez, versus Tommy Dreamer, versus Abyss, versus the Pope, in a Bound for Gold Gauntlet match. Now, on the surface, there's not one guy in there that I want to see in a title match going in. Like, going into the match, I didn't really care for it. But I want to talk about this guy, O'Shea. I thought he looked pretty good, man. Nice punches, kind of has that throwback Big Bubba vibe going. I don't know. Have you seen this guy wrestle before?
Yeah, he is pretty decent. I mean, there's nothing outstanding, but I kind of agree with you that he sort of does have a throwback vibe to him. And I think he probably was the... he was probably the most solid thing in the match. There were maybe other individual moments from some of the other individual guys that I thought were pretty good, but it's like sort of a consistent thing. Like, his performance was probably the most consistent of the guys in the match, to the extent that matters in a match like this, which was kind of ridiculous. I do want to mention this too, Will. Ken Anderson's microphone not coming down was fucking hilarious. That might have been the highlight of the entire show.
Happened the last pay-per-view, too. Do you remember?
Yes. All he's got is a terrible shtick, which isn't even good, and that doesn't even happen right.
Man, I hate him. I really hate him. I don't even want to spend a lot of time wasted on him. What about guys like Al Snow and Tommy Dreamer coming in? And normally something like this, and the way this match was worked, it was kind of Royal Rumble style, where you could get tossed out or pinned and you'd lose the match. And I didn't know that. I thought it was actually going to be a gauntlet. One guy gets pinned, another guy comes in, but it wasn't. It was like a Royal Rumble style match. I don't really want to see Al Snow in 2015, and I really don't want to see Tommy Dreamer, but God, Tommy Dreamer, by far, not even close, the most
over
guy in this match.
I think it may have been the most over guy on the show. Close to it.
Pretty close.
You know,
yeah.
He's in the conversation. And Dreamer always stays over. I always sort of defend Dreamer in one sense, in the sense that I will say this for, he always works hard. Like, you could say he sucks, you could say, you know, and I think there's a lot of truth to him not being all that exciting to watch, but he does always work hard. I'll give him that.
Hey, I even like the Dusty Rhodes tribute.
Yeah, he was wearing the polka dot pants tonight. Yeah, did the flip flop and fly. Like, I don't, he's kind of in that Jericho thing to me, you know, for the comparison with the MSG show that we watched and reviewed for the podcast last night, where I'm long past the point where I want to see Tommy Dreamer, but I can't say he was bad tonight. I really can't.
No, I just, you know, I I'm tired of seeing old guys. That's my thing.
I agree. Yeah. And although, I will say, in a match like this, I would have been fine with one or the other. I just didn't necessarily want to see both. Like, yeah. if they had just had Dreamer or just had Snow, and the irony is, I think it actually would have maximized the impact of those guys if they just had one of them.
Right.
But having two of them, especially because it's not like either one of them is really a real legend. You know what I mean? It's like your B level sort of third, fourth tier wrestling legends, if you want to even use that term, which is kind of bastardized as it is. I from that perspective, it's kind of silly. But I didn't have a problem with their performances either.
Yeah, well, another guy I never want to see again is Abyss. I mean, to me, this guy's a joke. I mean, it's sick. But you don't want to talk about Abyss, do you?
Worthless.
Yeah, worthless. I mean, what about this She-Ra guy? Like, this thing with his dancing fingers? I've never seen this guy before. I mean, is this a thing now? Or are they trying to get this over? Or is it something that they're trying to get over, but it's not over?
It's a thing, I guess. You know, they did that whole, there's that sort of infamous thing, you know, like, I guess it was in CZW, like, a few years, where your boy Rob Naylor was involved with I don't even keep track of those Chikara acts because I find them so awful. But, with the hypnotized dancing shtick. I mean, this isn't quite as ridiculous as that, but it's kind of in that neighborhood. Again, in a match like this, it's not really that bothersome, but I generally find stuff like that to be, like, you know, immediate change the channel type, I don't want to see this shit ever again material. So I have no fucking use for that.
Well, okay, another guy. Yeah, I don't really either, man. I think it was kind of stupid. It seemed like the announcers were hyping it up as, like, it's the newest sensation. It felt almost bad as Michael Cole, you know, doing the Emma dance.
Yeah. Or the Fandango.
Yeah. You know, JBL was the big Fandango proponent, if you remember. Like, really? You know, that was pretty pathetic. But it really did feel like that. Like, these guys are intentionally making it uncool if they're trying to make it cool. And I don't know. I don't know what kind of wrestler that guy is, because all he did was his shtick. So I have no idea. You know, is he any good?
I don't think so. I don't think he's any good at all.
Okay, I mean, he didn't really do a lot in this match except his little gimmick spot, so I couldn't really tell. What about this one-legged dude, man? I freaked out, man. I mean, we've seen one-legged wrestlers before. Who was the famous? Zach Gowen. The famous one. Dude, this guy comes out on one leg, man. I was legitimately freaked out. I'd never seen this guy. Tell me about Chris Melendez.
Well, he's a veteran. You know, I will say this, he's another guy that always works hard. You know, I mean, he was just in there for a burst of energy tonight, and I actually thought his sequence was pretty good for what it was. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't think there's any way you can be a one-legged wrestler. We've seen so many weird things in wrestling that I don't want to write that off as an impossibility. But you bet there's I almost feel like you have to – there's got to be a way to – if you're going to use that as a gimmick – because it is a gimmick. I don't give a shit if it's a legitimate disability. The fact is, if you're wrestling as a one-legged wrestler, you're going to be billed that way, and it will be your gimmick.
So same thing like being a midget, man. I mean,
that's right. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
It's just the way it goes. So I feel like there's got to be a way to, like, sort of put that on the card and fit that into the card in such a way where – it either feels special or it's clear that this guy is not, you know, doesn't have advantages because of his one leg, I guess would be the way I'd put it.
Right.
I honestly don't know how I feel about that kind of stuff. Like, on the one hand, I don't object to it. I don't care that it happens. But I also don't really know that I would ever feel super compelled to go out of my way and watch a match involving a one-legged guy unless he was really, really, really good, because I do think there are innate problems with wrestling with one leg.
And then like, wrestling with the prosthetic leg on top of that, you know.
Yeah, I almost wish he was a heel and used a prosthetic knee lift for the finish.
That would be awesome.
I'm not even kidding. I almost... That was the thing. I think that would be tremendous.
Dude, hey, for the record, we're not going to discriminate against people with one legs. If you're a wrestling fan, you're on one leg. We wish you nothing but the best. We're not trying to dog you. But having said that, what about winning this match? Like, to me, putting Tyrus and Anderson at the end of a rather long but an uneventful match, man, I really didn't want to see either one of these guys win. I guess the argument was that it makes sense for Tyrus to win to create heat between him and EC3. But, man, I just think both guys are the drizzling shit.
Tyrus, I have such weird feelings about him. There have been instances in his career where I actually thought he had – I don't want to say that I thought
potential.
He was good.
Yeah, potential.
Yeah, potential. Exactly. And then now it's just – I would not say he's the drizzling shits, but I absolutely don't want to see him either. And Ken Anderson is fucking awful. So I absolutely don't want to see it come down to those. I was actually hoping like Jesse Goddard or somebody like that would come down, because I actually think he's kind of underrated. Not that he's great, but you know, he's got a good look, and I think he sort of understands his act.
Well, both you and I like the Goddard versus the
Robbie match.
Yeah, the Robbie match from the last pay-per-view.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I kind of hoped it would come down like he would be involved, but as things were going down, I think it was pretty clear that Tyrus was going to win it. And from a booking perspective, I can't knock that. But from a this is something I want to see perspective, I have no interest in seeing him wrestle for the title. You know what I mean? Like, storyline wise. It probably makes sense, although that's debatable based on what would happen later in the show. But I don't really have any interest in seeing Tyrus in the top marquee match for a wrestling company in 2015. You know what I mean? Like, I don't. There are independent shows that I go to or that I watch or that I cover, you know, that I would not. Where I honestly can say I don't think Tyrus would be deserving of being in a main event. If you're allegedly a national promotion, I really don't think he's a main event caliber wrestler.
No, I agree. And the sad thing is, on the indies, he's really too big to kind of fit into any indie promotion. He couldn't fit in on ROH. He couldn't fit in on a PWG show or, you know, anything like that.
I mean, he could go to a place like PWS, you know, or one of those places that sort of caters, like House
or New England Wrestling or something.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. But yeah, he, as far as the name promotions, I mean, even in the South, where like what is asked of, you know, or what is asked and what is expected and how the shows are booked is a lot different than with the so-called super indies. He still feels like he'd kind of be an odd fit for a variety of reasons. You know, like he should be a guy that is a national star because of his size, that is booked as a monster and kind of protected as a special monster. But I don't know that he has been cultivated the way you need to be successful in that role, and nor is there a promotion that's going to appropriately book a guy like that, to be honest.
Right.
So he's kind of fucked by circumstance.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least we can say Ken Anderson did not win because.
Thank God.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to this next match. It's for the TNA tag titles. And last time we watched the show, the American Wolves were in a match that we both thought was pretty good. You know, I mean, and you know, man, you and me, we're on team hate Davey Richards. We cannot stand this guy. And so Trevor Lee and Brian Myers, two guys. Brian Myers basically looks like he's doing an AJ Styles tribute act the way he's dressed. And Trevor Lee is like the most nondescript. He looked to me like a 1990-91 NWA jobber. You know what I mean? I mean
he looked like fucking Cougar Jay. Terry throwing him on the floor. He's taking
Lee
unprotected
Peak,
head bumps.
You know, Lee Peak, you know, kind of that vibe, right? And so, but man, I really dug the hell out of Lee and Myers, man. When they were in control, I thought this was solid, and Trevor Lee has some really nice moves, man. He does this flipping power slam. I forgot what they called the in and out or something. And then he has this super nice delayed German suplex. And I thought they did a really solid job of cutting off the match, and it kind of allowed Richards and Edwards, again, to be reserved. So when they made their comebacks, they could do their flashy shit, and it mattered. And so this is like the second American Wolves match in a row that I liked this year. I don't know, man. Do I have to soften my stance on Davey Richards, and or just Lee and Myers that good at what they were doing tonight?
Well, I do think, to be fair, I do think Richards and Edwards are always going to be better off in a tag team match as a rule, because I think tag team matches lend themselves to less excess if they're worked the way they should be worked. Because you have very simple structure and formula for tag team matches that can be routinely applied, which even if you don't know how to sell that well, and even if you don't really, and a lot of your spots are kind of bullshitty, you can still have a good match as long as you follow the basic parameters of that formula, in my view.
No, I agree. And they did it.
And that's exactly what you saw here. I mean, I didn't think this was a great match, but I did think it was pretty good. You know, Lee is probably one of the three or four hottest guys in independent wrestling. I mean, I actually think it's kind of a shame that he's in TNA, same with Andrew Everett, because he is – he He does have a reputation of being somewhat difficult to work with if you talk to certain promoters, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school saying that. But he is a guy who's young and he's super talented, and I like the fact that he has that sort of low-key look. I think it sets him apart from so many other independent guys. I think he has tremendous upside and tremendous long-term potential. Brian Myers, of course, formerly Curt Hawkins, you know.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, I didn't even recognize him, bro.
Yeah,
I had no idea that was him.
The infamous Mark Henry hater. So fuck him. But he was perfectly serviceable in this match. I think they're a solid little team, you know. And I thought the match was pretty good. I did not care for the finish. The one thing I didn't like was the finish itself. I just thought that was the one example of a match where you've got your true Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards being Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. But aside from that,
Hold on. Let me explain the finish, because I guarantee you anyone who listens to the show, they probably didn't watch this show. I don't know of anyone who's going to pay for this show. So here's what happens. Davey Richards does his spot where he does the superplex, and this is something that Seth Rollins is now doing. He does the superplex, and he goes right into the suplex, and then Eddie Edwards does the Red Dragon kick to the back, and then Davey Richards drops Lee on his head with a brainbuster for the pin. And it felt so contrived, man. It just...
Yeah. It felt very unnatural, especially because the rest of the match wasn't like that. You know what I mean? Like...
They've gotten their asses beat so much, like, there's no way they have the strength and the stamina to pull off something like that. If they would have just done a brainbuster, the kick and then the brainbuster cool, maybe the superplex and then Eddie Edwards comes off with a splash or an elbow or something, that would have been cool. But just the way they pulled it off. Who did that move first, Red Dragon or the Wolves?
Oh, God, I don't know the answer to that. I assume it's Red Dragon, but I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I didn't know. I just... You know, I don't really like that move anyway. I don't think that's a great finisher, the kick to the back into a suplex, but whatever. You know, either way, that was a minor complaint for the match, a solid tag match. And you know what, man? There were so many guys in that gauntlet that I hadn't seen, and I enjoyed the Tommy Dreamer tribute enough that so far, man, I'm kind of enjoying the show. Like, I have no problems with the show so far, you know? So that's where we're at. Now let's move on to the next match, and that's Bobby Roode versus Bobby Lashley in the King of the Road title match. And I don't know, I think it's a stupid title to have, but whatever. The biggest thing that stood out to me is that I thought if you just had the volume off and you were watching the match move for move, it was a pretty good match. You know, these guys were working really hard, but man, with the volume up, you might as well have had the volume off, because they got no reaction. Nobody cared about this match until like the very last 25, 30 seconds.
Yeah, that seemed to be the consensus for the five people other than me who were watching it on Twitter. I feel like, I mean, here's the problem. Well, there's a lot of problems with TNA. But the number one problem with TNA when it comes to television production and a show like this is, it's such an obviously dead-in-the-water promotion that even if you manage to get people to come to a building and pay to see it, they probably don't know anything about the storylines. They probably know very little about the angles, and they probably have very little investment in anybody on the roster outside of the few names like Matt and Jeff Hardy, for example, that have like long-term resonance. They almost certainly aren't going to care about Bobby Lashley and Bobby Roode, even though – if you're somebody who follows TNA television, particularly over the last couple of years, those are two of the biggest stars. And in the case of Bobby Lashley, a guy who's actually been pretty well booked, you know, it's at least by the standards of TNA, you know, so it's kind of a weird situation, because I don't know that there's a lot they could do, you know. And I felt bad, because I actually thought if you were looking at it just from a perspective of the match, and looking move for move, like you said, I thought this was the best match on the show. You know, Bobby Lashley coming out with the LeBron, LeBron tribute headband on, and the build around the suplexes I really liked. I thought they did do the sort of finisher trading thing, but I thought it came across actually pretty organic.
It came across like two guys who were just giving it their all to me.
Yeah. And you know, I really liked the spot with Rude's big bump onto the guardrail. I thought it was well-timed. I thought it looked good.
Yep.
I thought the escapes out of the Bobby Lashley armbar, which was kind of a different variation of an armbar than we normally see, but an armbar that did look painful. I thought that was good. You know, the escape from the Rude crossface into the big finish from Lashley. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff in this. It flowed well. It built well. It wasn't just spots that were thrown out there to be thrown out there. I thought this was actually, you know, like, I mean, I'm not really a star rating guy, but, you know, I would say this was a good, maybe even borderline, very good match. But the crowd really was just non-existent. And at the end, I really honestly felt bad for these guys. I especially felt bad for Lashley because he's a guy that's improved so much compared to what he used to be. And it just doesn't matter. You know, he's in a promotion where it doesn't matter, and I don't know that it's ever going to matter because I can't see him getting back to WWE.
Well, you know, the sad thing is that the way this show was booked with clean finishes, there wasn't one bullshit finish on the match where, you know, like even the main event, which we'll talk about later, like there were no swerves, there were no tricks, you know, that they for the most part they called it right down the middle, you know, the clean finishes overall. But this company has such a history of bullshit that even when they do something right, like tonight, you know, they've exhausted all of their goodwill. It's gone.
Yeah, they have no goodwill. And, like, I don't know what kind of crowd they drew tonight. It looked like it was okay, but who knows? I mean, by TNA standards, who knows what okay is? You know what I mean? I mean, like, Chris Zellner told the story yesterday, you know, the independent show he went to in Barnesville with some TNA guys on it drew more than the TNA house show did, you know, like on the same night. And a few years ago, I was at a show, you know, when TNA was in much more shit, less bad shape than they are now, where they drew 250 for the show they did here. And then a week later, Chris Masters was here for the local promotion and they drew 100 people more than that. So, I mean, they can't even beat local promotions, you know?
Yeah, man, that's the name. I mean, look at AJ Styles, man. The guy does nothing in TNA, right? Nothing. Like, he was on the card for 10 years, man. They couldn't draw shit. All of a sudden, man, he's the hottest thing in the indies, you know?
Yeah, it's just such a severely damaged brand. And it doesn't matter how big the stars are. I mean, there's certain, yes, we can point to a few occasions where they've managed to pop decent houses around certain sort of promotional tricks, like when they had the Von Erichs coming in Texas last year. But for the most part, they really can't do anything. They just don't have attraction as a promotion, and they've got so much bad will. And, you know, I mean, even when they do some things right, the overall landscape is just so bleak for them. It's just hopeless. And I mean, we'll get to it, because I think the main event is really a big testament to this. It's kind of one of the saddest things I've ever seen. But this match was a good match, though, and I did feel bad for Lashley and Rude, and I think they deserve better than that. I wish there was another place they could go where they could, you know, be putting on matches like that in front of audiences who cared.
Well, you know, I went to that TNA pay-per-view a couple of years ago. What was it, the one in San Antonio where they drew over 5,000 people or 7,000 people or something?
Yeah.
It was a pretty hot show in terms of crowds. And, man, talk about killing a town. You know, I mean, they have this huge show in San Antonio, right? One, they never even tried to come back here again after we gave them, like, the biggest audience they had ever had, or one of the easily top five biggest audiences they ever had. And two, they put on a shitty show. I don't know what they would have drawn afterwards. I wouldn't have gone for free.
Yeah.
If someone gave me a ticket. So, yeah, it's just kind of pathetic. And we didn't even mention this. This might be their last pay-per-view ever, right?
I mean, who knows? Like, the thing about this promotion, I've always tried to say, and, you know, I was one of the first people to really talk about and report on and get some of the details out of them losing the Spike deal. And, you know, but the reality is, I will not believe this promotion's dead until it's actually dead. They always find a reason to survive. Always. Yep. They find a way. I don't know if it's just that Bob Carter is desperate to keep his daughter the fuck away from his actual business.
Has to be, right?
I don't know what it is, but somehow, some way, they always manage to stay afloat, even when it looks like there's absolutely no chance for survival. They find a way. So, you know, I this could be their last pay-per-view. It probably should be their last pay-per-view because, like you, I don't really think this promotion can justify its existence, and I frankly haven't felt that way for a long time. But I don't know that it will be their last pay-per-view.
It's true. You know what? Let's not even call it their last pay-per-view until, like you said, they're DOA, not TNA. Okay. Before we go to the break, they had this segment where they inducted Earl Hebner into the TNA Hall of Fame. And you know, the TNA Hall of Fame is bullshit. Nobody cares about it. But let's talk Earl Hebner. If any referee should be in the Hall of Fame, do you think Earl Hebner would be that guy?
Do you mean any referee in history?
Well, I don't know. I mean, just...
I mean, like, when I...
Should referees even be considered
well,
for
Hall
of Fame?
Well, I will say this. Like, I will say this. So, like, look at, say, something like the Observer Hall of Fame, which I'm a voter in, and which you should be. You look at something like that Hall of Fame, there's no referee in it, okay? But there is ring announcers in it. There's another ring announcer on the ballot right now in Howard Finkel. To me, referee's way more deserving of being in the Hall of Fame than the ring announcer. And I'm not even saying Howard Finkel would be a bad pick. I'm just saying I do think there is an argument that referees should be in Hall of Fame. They're a very important part of wrestling matches. But to me, if it's in the United States, the first referee I'm picking is Tommy Young.
Okay.
You know, that's my pick. Granted, that's my bias. That's who I grew up on. You know, if you go international, you got a lot of different options. You know,
why wouldn't you go Bronco Lubitsch, man?
Jesus Christ.
Or who's the famous one in Japan? Hero something?
Oh, you got Red Shoes. Then you, oh God, what's the guy's name? I can't think of his name now. And then in Mexico, you got, Tarantis?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are certainly referees that you could come up with that would probably be deserving of being something, you know, that, or at least of being on like a ballot for something like an Observer Hall of Fame.
I don't know. I mean, I think Hebner, I mean, he did play a pretty important part in a couple of major deals, obviously the Montreal. So for historical significance, I think he should be considered. And the double cross with the Andre Hogan deal, which was like one of the highest rated things. I'm not saying that that was because of Hebner, but played a pretty big deal, you know.
No, I agree.
I think he was the referee in every single major match between those two points.
Yeah, I don't have any. I have absolutely no qualms with the idea of Earl Hebner being in a Wrestling Hall of Fame. I really don't. Although I do think it's kind of lame that TNA had a chance to induct somebody like, say, a James Storm, regardless of what his current situation is with the company, or even a Bobby Roode.
Yeah.
Somebody who's been with the promotion for the whole time and busted their ass and, like, stuck with them through thick and thin, and instead you get another WWE cast-off. It's like they had to find another WWE cast-off, and they're like, fuck, there's not really a good one we can pick. Let's just do the WWE cast-off ref.
Yeah.
Like, they're so adamant to not put over the few handful of guys that they've got that were – stars through them, that instead they've decided to, you know, I mean, I just, that kind of irks me.
Yeah, and real quick, how awkward does Billy Corgan look inside of a TNA ring?
Oh, God, how awkward does Billy Corgan look, period?
I don't know, man. I like some of the Smashing Pumpkin songs. I mean, they're not my favorite band.
So do I.
But my God, man, get out of the wrestling business. I've heard him talk. I mean, you know, Colin Meltzer. What do you call Meltzer? Like, several names. Like, you know, when Meltzer is basically reporting the truth, Colin Meltzer a hack or something. You know, give me a break.
Let me tell you something. For a guy known for being transphobic and making comments about how strange trans people look, he has no business to be calling anybody, saying anybody looks strange. That motherfucker is one of the creepiest looking people on the face of the planet Earth.
I didn't know he was transphobic. I don't pay attention.
Oh yeah, that's a thing from the. But I mean, he looks like if fucking Powder had a physical disability or something. Like, I don't know. He looks like horrific. He's like a horrific looking creature.
Dude, just called him fucking Powder. That's fucked up.
I mean, shit. Oh, dude, how awesome would it be if the end of TNA was fucking Billy Corgan standing in a ring like Powder summoning down lightning to blow up the fucking Impact Zone? That would be the greatest ending.
I was thinking something more like Uncle Fester and Shelley Duvall had a child, you know? Well, whatever. Anyway, on that note, let's go to break, listen to all the shows that Place to Be Nation offers. And we come back, we'll run down the last three matches of the show. You're listening to Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Show, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman Podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows, not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, Wrestling Culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Okay, welcome back, Place to Be Nation. This is Will. I'm with Dylan, and we're reviewing TNA's Bound for Glory 2015. And the next match we have is Awesome Kong versus Gail Kim for the Knockouts title. And one of the things TNA has been praised for over the years is their Knockout division. But I think people are really talking about Dutch Mantel's Knockout division like almost a decade ago, because I watched this match, and I sort of liked it. I liked the idea of Gail Kim trying to jump on the big monster and take her down, and the big monster squashing her. But Awesome Kong looked really, really limited and really slow. It just looks like she has no energy to do the big moves. What did you think about this match here, Dylan?
I thought it was okay. You know, there, I agree with that. I mean, as far I think Kong has had some major back issues, so you could, it's possible that she shouldn't even be wrestling right now. But
as a
match, I thought it was okay. It is kind of sad because this is actually the feud that I think people point to when they think of the height of that, you know, Dutch Mantel booked era Knockouts division. I think this is really the feud that sort of put the Knockouts on the map. So you want these two to have a match that is sort of to the level of what they used to be able to, or at least the myth of what they used to be able to do, because I haven't watched those matches in years and have no clue how well they hold up. But it certainly wasn't a bad match. I thought some of the stuff they did was actually kind of clever. The big spot on the floor I thought looked really, really violent and nasty with Kong sort of dropping Gail Kim face first on the chairs from the implant buster position or whatever it was. I liked the splash off the second rope. I thought the Kong hit looked really brutal. The match didn't really have a lot of flow to it. Like, I don't want to say that it was completely cluster because that's not true, but it didn't seem to sort of flow organically. Whereas I thought something like Rude versus Lashley from earlier in the show flowed really organically.
True.
I didn't think this had that sort of feel to it at all. The finish I also thought was really unsatisfying. I mean, I understood what they were going for, but it felt like a cheap finish given what they had set up to that point with Gail Kim sort of winning on almost a flukish roll-up. It was a fine match. Didn't dislike it. Thought it was perfectly okay. Probably below the level of what some people might have hoped for with these two. Or certainly if they hadn't seen them recently and they were sort of going off the reputation of what they've been able to do in the past. But I can't criticize it too much because I've seen a lot worse when it comes to women's wrestling in the United States. So I was okay with it overall.
No, that's a fair assessment. I thought it was okay. I know I read Meltzer's thoughts, and he called it a bad match. I didn't think it was bad, but this is not the type of wrestling that Meltzer's going to enjoy anyway. You know, not enough flips and jumps and, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, it didn't have 57 near falls, so you can forget it.
Yeah, so, but I didn't think it was bad at all. You know, I just, once again, man, that crowd takes you out of it, you know. And I didn't really care for the stuff with Gail Kim's husband. You know, it was fine. He's trying to save his wife, but, you know, keeping a chair away from Kong. But then a couple of seconds later, she just smashes Gail Kim over two chairs anyway, with or without the chair he had, so.
Yeah, that just felt hokey. That was an unnecessary part of the match.
And this is another problem that they have is just, you know, they've done such a horrible job after that really hot run with the Knockouts. You know, I call it the Dutch Mantel years, that, again, they've done such a horrible job since then. I don't think that they can win back those fans who enjoyed that either, right?
No. I think they're all gone, especially because they've got the NXT girls to cheer for now. I should say women. I don't want to be, you know. But, I mean, if you're a fan of women's wrestling now, in the United States, you don't have to go looking for secondary places to look. Yes, the Divas Revolution on the main roster has been shit, but you still got the NXT stuff, and you, at very least on the big specials and occasionally on TV with NXT television, you know you're going to get a pretty damn good match. So you got a major medium that you can go to. And if you really want to go beyond that, you've got Shimmer, you've got Shine, and you've got these groups are groups that have that are easier to get a hold of now than ever before because of VOD and the widespread availability let's put it this way: at the height of the Knockouts, wireless internet was still relatively new in terms of being a broad based thing that virtually everybody has access to. That wasn't necessarily the case then. Now, you know, with the technology changes and everything, people don't have, like, it's not like, you don't have to go that route. You have so many other options if you want to see quality women's wrestling you know, so TNA would, it would really be an uphill battle for them to ever reclaim that market. I don't think they would ever even make a good faith effort in the first place. But even if they wanted to, I don't really think that that market's there to claim anymore. I think there's too many other options that people can pursue that they know they're going to see a higher quality. I mean, if you want to see, they don't, I mean, the reality is they don't even have top flight female talent on the roster really anymore. I mean, you know, the best girls are either in NXT or they're people working independents like Heidi Lovelace, like, or in Japan.
Well, what do you think about someone like Gail Kim, who, was it just because of the inferiority of the women surrounding her that she always looked better than the rest of the women, or do you think that it just her time is coming past?
I think it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I don't think she was ever a particularly good worker. I don't think she was bad. I think there are some. The other thing is there are sometimes people just fit well with each other. You know what I mean? Like, I think her and Kong fit well together. I do think Kong was a very good worker at her peak. And I think she fit well with Kong, kind of like Singh fit well with Vader. You know, no one would ever say that Singh was a great wrestler. You might think that he's good. You might think that he's very good. But you're not going to find too many people who are going to say Singh was a great in-ring performer.
Well, but, they're a complete mark for the company.
Yeah. But when it came to that series with Vader, those are a great series, and it's not just because of Vader. Sting meshed really well with them. They brought out the best in each other. And that very well may have been the case with Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, because when you really think about it, she's not had a run of any note with anybody other than Kong. I mean, she really hasn't. You know, I did enjoy the Taryn Terrell matches, but they weren't at the level of the Kong matches. I never thought she was that great to begin with, but I think she benefited because during that era, TNA presented the Knockouts as something special. They did a really good job with how they presented them. There was a lot of variety to them. You know, Gail Kim was different than the Beautiful People, who was different than Awesome Kong, who was different than Roxy. I mean, every single one of them was a little bit different. And I think that ultimately was more important than the quality of the wrestling was the presentation of the characters. Now they don't have too many people that are all that impressive in the ring, nor do they have good presentation of characters. So it's just they lose on both fronts.
Yeah, and Kong, man, I mean, I had such high hopes for being the Barbie killer in WWE, man. And like I said, if she has back problems, that's completely understandable. But she looked a little rough in this. But she still had some neat moves, you know. I mean, I kind of like her as the women monster. You know, because it always, no matter if the match is good or not, it's always going to make her stand out, you know.
Yeah, and I think that there's a role for that in women's wrestling. I think if there's one thing I could change about the WWE's current division, it's that I would have somebody like that in the division. I think there's something to, you know, I mean, when you think about some of the great Joshi wrestlers of all time, and neither you nor I is a particularly big Joshi fan, but when I think of who my favorite Joshi wrestlers are, it's, who is it? It's Bull Nakano.
Aja Kong, yeah.
Dynamite Kanzai, I love. Who's another, yeah. You know, like, these are my favorites. My favorites are those sort of bruiser types that stand out from the pack and beat the shit out of people, you know? I think the WWE would be, you know, doing itself a great service to get somebody like that in the division. Because, frankly, I think it would only make the babyfaces stronger. I mean, can you imagine somebody like Bayley having to challenge like a brutal monster, like an Aja Kong type heel? I mean, that would be awesome. I would probably be more into that than I would be any of the stuff that they currently do with the women. And I really like what they do with women in NXT.
I agree with all that, man. I mean, you know, we're talking TNA, so what can you do? Throw up your hands. It's one of the many problems that faces this company that they had nobody but themselves to blame, from inept management, inept booking, I'm going to say inept agents who put together the matches, inept workers that they've pushed to the top over better talent. It just, this company kind of did itself in when they had everything that you would want going for a company. Prime time slot on cable. You had a big money mark backing you up. The only thing you had was, like I said, all of those other problems kind of overwhelming that golden goose that was given to them. It's so, so sad. And speaking of talent that I don't know. I have mixed feelings on Kurt Angle. So let's get into this. This is Kurt Angle versus Eric Young. Supposedly there was an angle where Kurt Angle's neck was injured or damaged. Was that a legitimate angle, or was that a work?
I actually have no clue. I've only followed TNA peripherally for the last several months, so I can't even answer that
question. When you gave up doing the weekly TV show?
Yeah, when I quit hating myself, I decided to... the thing is, I don't have Destination America anymore. You know, I switched cable services when I moved, so now I don't have it. And, you know, I have seen a few of the shows since I've moved. But I'm not going to go out of my way to seek out that fucking show every week. You know, there's no way.
Yeah. And that's pretty sad that the one guy who's willing to punish himself to recap it isn't willing to go seek it out. That's pretty sad. Anyway, so this match. So the big deal is Eric Young, after, you know, some back and forth, Eric Young hits the pile driver. The EMTs and the medical crew come out. Okay, Kurt Angle can't continue. They're going to quit the match. Eric Young lays waste to everybody. And then, after he lays waste to everybody and gets Angle in the ring, inexplicably, he just quits working on the neck. He stops going for the neck. It baffled me. And then out of nowhere at the end, Angle just hooks on the ankle lock, but then because all of a sudden it was a no DQ match, I don't remember them saying it was a no DQ match, but all of a sudden it was a no DQ match, and then Eric Young has to tap out in the middle of the ring because he can't use the ropes to break the hold. I don't know, man. I don't know if this was sad or pathetic or just, once again, bad booking. I mean, I guess Kurt Angle going over is the right move, so booking-wise, I guess it was the right move. But I don't even know if that's right. I don't know how hot Eric Young's been or if Angle needs to be going over guys like Eric Young. I don't know. It's just the match sort of sucked. I thought it was kind of cool early on when Eric Young was really vicious, but then afterwards, it wasn't. I mean, dude, how sad is this? When the biggest thing that was over in the entire match was an audience member dressed as Captain America and the crowd begging them to use Captain America's shield. They didn't even care if Eric Young were to use it on Kurt Angle. They just wanted them to use Captain America's shield as a weapon.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that really got – and keep in mind, Kurt Angle is, in theory, a huge star. You know what I mean? It's certainly relative to the rest of the TNA guys.
He got a pop coming out, but once the bell rang, it was dead.
It just – this match was really – I agree with you. It was really depressing. I'm actually a big Eric Young fan in the sense that I think he is a very underrated guy who – was booked in ways over the years that has unfortunately made it where he can never be truly credible, no matter how good he is in a particular character. Because, you know, it's basically like if you turn Santino into a fucking badass, there's always going to be a segment of the viewing population that's going to watch it and think, this is the guy with the cobra. You know, they're never going to be, like, to a degree, once you've gone full-blown goof, you can never come back. And I think that's unfortunately the story with Eric Young. I think he's actually a very talented wrestler. And it legitimately makes me sad that's sort of going to be the story of his career. You know, they've tried. I think he portrays the kind of crazy heel pretty well. I think he's a hard worker. I think he's capable of having good matches. I agree with you that I enjoyed the front end of this match. And I also agree with you that it completely fell apart on the back end. I don't really fault Angle for it falling apart. I just think it was a poorly laid out and put together match that was probably never going to work. And it is not something that I would, you know, I don't see how either guy benefited from this. I guess, you know, Angle beating Eric Young does nothing because everybody expects that. And Eric Young beating Angle, which, you know, I mean, again, I don't know that that means anything either anymore. I just feel like there's so little this promotion can do that would really mean anything. You know, you could argue that they could get behind some of these guys like Trevor Lee, like Andrew Everett, you know, like Brian Myers, like, you know, who clearly are interested in working hard, but would that really make a difference at the end of the day? Would that really move the needle? Would it have any impact on business? Probably not. It's unfortunate. It really is. It's sad because I didn't even think this match was that awful. It just wasn't very good, but it kind of exemplifies a lot of the problems with TNA. You know, you got this match where you don't even know the rules and, there's this weird stoppage in the middle of it, and then there's not a stoppage. It goes back, and the match continues, and then Angle sort of wins out of nowhere after allegedly having severe head trauma.
He had no offense the entire match. And then all of a sudden, just this ankle lock of doom just conquers everything. It was depressing.
It was just poorly laid out. And I actually, and think about who's saying this, Will. I actually felt bad for both guys. Yes, I felt bad for Kurt Angle. I thought he was put in a position to fail.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's go to the next match. And this one, this match probably had the most heat out of anybody. I think Matt Hardy was pretty over. But maybe not as much as you would expect for being in North Carolina. You know, maybe it was just because it's TNA. Who knows? But this is EC3 versus Matt Hardy versus Drew Galloway for the TNA World title, and with Jeff Hardy as the guest referee. And I'm going to give him props for one thing. At first I thought, okay, they're going to do the thing where Jeff turns on Matt and hits Jeff over the head, which would be so TNA, right? That is absolutely what you expect from this
match. That's what I thought would happen.
And then after a while I thought, and this is what happened, I thought, well, maybe they're going to go the Undertaker, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels route, you know, from SummerSlam, in a sense where Jeff would swing the chair, EC3 would duck, and then Matt would get hit with the chair, you know, and then Jeff would be forced to make the count. And they didn't do that either. And I think booking-wise, and man, I never give credit to TNA for booking, because their booking was so horrible. Man, the booking of that last pay-per-view single-handedly ruined that show. Never mind the wrestling. The booking of the show was so stupid that there was nothing to like about it. Whereas I think at least booking-wise, they got it right here. And the match was your typical three-way, big spots, guys going in and out of the match. Another match, though, that I guess it was a no DQ match after all. I didn't hear them say
it was no DQ. They did say it was no DQ beforehand. Galloway did say that in a promo before the match.
Okay. Well, you know, I wasn't really paying attention to Drew Galloway's promo, so forgive me if I kind of ignored his promo. But, you know, but even then, it's like, come on, two no DQ matches in a row? Even then, it's just whatever. But having said that, the match was no great shakes, but they were trying to make this a big emotional moment for Matt Hardy, his kids out in the ring, his wife, his dad, Jeff Hardy celebrating with him. It just felt empty. Maybe it's just because it's the TNA title and it doesn't really matter as a title, but it felt empty. I don't know, man. Are you more optimistic about this than I am?
I'm probably higher on the match. I actually thought it was a pretty good match. Not anything outstanding, not anything I'd ever tell anybody to go out of the way to see, but I thought the spots were well put together. Even the spots that are kind of contrived spots, like the corner spot with Galloway doing the German when they were up top, I even thought the way they did that was okay, better than normal.
Sure.
I really liked the Galloway tope, even though you could see it coming too. I thought it looked really clean. I liked the way they did it with EC3 sort of getting out of the way and having Hardy take the impact. I thought EC3 was really good in this. He's a guy that can look really good at times and other times not so good. And I thought this was one of his stronger performances in terms of knowing when to hit his spots, knowing when to sort of be the guy who was taking the heat and when he was to be the guy who was sort of delivering the heat, so to speak.
Well, he had the great match with Spud earlier.
Oh, that's a great match. Yeah, that's an excellent match. Although I thought Spud was the star of that, but he was good in it. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, and I've seen independent matches from him this year where I thought he really brought it too. I mean, he's got ability. He just doesn't always turn it on. But I thought he was on tonight. I thought he tried to wrestle it like it was a big match. You know, I like Galloway's windmill punches. I just kind of mark for those because he throws them with real vengeance.
Hold on. Speaking of Galloway, because I know you were a huge mark for Drew McIntyre when he was in WWE. How's he been in the indies? I haven't really kept up to him.
Excellent. You know, I think he's been awesome in the indies. I think he's really acquitted himself well. He's been a good fit. He was a good fit in Evolve. I think he's about to go back there. He's been, you know, the stuff he's done with that I've seen with IS. W in Scotland has been good. or ICW rather, in Scotland has been good. The stuff, just random indie matches that have popped up here and there, I think he's been good. I've really enjoyed Galloway on the independent scene.
Well,
but
and maybe I'm just asking because, I don't really keep up with indies like you do. But the only matches I've seen Galloway in have been like these multi-man matches, because remember he was in that King of the Mountain match last pay-per-view. So I haven't really been able to see Galloway shine in TNA, on these.
Well, I mean, he's look, it's TNA. You know, if you want to see him shine, watch one of those indie shows. You're not going to see anybody shine in TNA, unfortunately. And I think that actually ties into this match, because I thought it was pretty good. I was not a huge fan of the finish. I agree with you that it was, if you're going to have Jeffs involved in the finish, this was the way to do it. I just wish that if they were going to do the title switch, I wish it had been clean, with no sort of questions asked about who wins. But
we knew once Jeff Hardy was ref, something was going to happen.
Sure. And, they did the thing with EC3 freaking out backstage and throwing John Gaborik over the table. And so that's probably going to lead somewhere, they really did open up a possibility that they're even going to overturn this title win, which I pray they're not stupid enough to do that, but it's TNA, so you really can't rule that out as a possibility.
So they're going to do a dusty finish, huh?
It wouldn't shock me, the way that match was finished. Especially because of the fact that Tyrus won. I don't know. It would not shock me to see them do that, to do a dusty finish.
Well, let's go to a bigger theme, and I brought this up, I think, last night on the reaction show. I will give credit to EC3 on one thing, and that is he's one of the few heel champions we have right now that wrestles like a heel. Jay Lethal, Seth Rollins, nothing but babyface spots, but yet they're supposed to be the heel champions. So I'm going to give EC3 props for that.
Oh, absolutely. He absolutely does wrestle like a heel. And he's I think he's a good character. I think he's a guy that WWE frankly missed the boat on. It's a shame that they didn't do something with him there and that he's in a dead-end company that's not going to go anywhere.
And as we've noticed with WWE, they're really a myopic company that doesn't have like a large vision for anybody right now.
No, of course not. But the irony is, I feel if he had been there a little bit longer, he might have survived in development and become a bigger star. But he just happened to be around at kind of the wrong time.
Or maybe if he was around when they actually had this NXT facility with the specials and the TV show and... it's possible.
But it didn't happen for him, He tried to make the most of the situation in TNA. I'll give him that. He really has tried to make the most of the situation there. I don't know that he's been totally successful in that, but he's tried. And this match was, the Matt Hardy thing, I kind of feel like there's a part of me that feels for Matt Hardy, because this is a guy who, to one degree or another, appears to have gotten his life together from sort of a real low point a couple years back. And I've got a soft spot in my heart for guys who do that. And I do think for the last couple of years, he's been a very good in-ring performer, and he's worked really, really hard and done a lot to sort of improve and get back to the Jeff Hardy that, or Matt Hardy rather, that a lot of us enjoyed, like in 2007, 2006, 2008 era. So I really do want to give him credit in that regard. And I agree with you, this should have been a big moment, and it didn't feel like a big moment. Even within the confines of TNA, it didn't feel like a big moment. Like for example, if you compare this to Rockstar Spud versus EC3, that match felt like a big match. It did, no doubt. I don't want to hear this, they can't do it, it's the company. No, they're capable of it from time to time when all things hit right. And this should have been a situation where all things did hit right, and they just really didn't. I enjoyed the match more than I thought I would, because I'm not a big fan of triple threats. And I was pleasantly surprised to see Hardy win. I kind of like the idea of Hardy finally getting a top singles belt, even in a dead company like TNA, because it's sort of like a lifetime achievement award for a guy who I do think has been a hard worker for a long time.
True.
But what does it really mean? Nothing. And how did it come off as far as a big moment? Not very big. And how did I feel after seeing it? Pretty damn sad, because what I saw was a guy who's worked so hard to get back from such a bad place in his big moment, and it didn't matter, a guy who is one of the more underrated overall talents in wrestling, who's busted his ass, who got screwed with a bad gimmick by WWE. Actually, two of those guys in Galloway and EC3. And now they're just sort of languishing, and, you know, they're working for a company that, frankly, there's really no hope for upward trajectory. You're just kind of stuck there. I mean, these guys main evented this show tonight. They worked hard, and what does it matter? It doesn't matter at all. That's really sad.
Yeah, no, it is. And then, in a way, it's kind of sad that if this is their last pay-per-view, which it could very well be, that everybody worked hard. I'm going to give it a thumbs up on the booking, because booking-wise, I think, you know, when you do all clean finishes, it kind of makes you walk away with a positive feeling on the show. I can't argue with the people that went over. Like, you know, would I like to see Trevor Lee win the tag belt? Sure, why not? But it doesn't bother me that he didn't, or that they didn't. Did I want to see Ken Anderson and Tyrus in that gauntlet match? No, but, you know, whatever. I guess it fits in the storylines. But overall, you know, no complaints with the booking. Wrestling-wise, I'd go thumbs in the middle, because, you know, there were a few oddball spots. Nothing blow away wrestling-wise. Although I know you said the Lashley match you thought was your favorite match. I'd probably go with the tag match, which shocks me, because I think the tag match was my favorite match last show. But I don't know. Where do you stand on this as like a show? I don't know if I'd recommend it to people, because nothing really matters in this company.
I can't go thumbs up for that very reason. It's funny. Chris Zellner and I last night, and actually Pete and you too, when we were doing the MSG show, we kind of talked about how it felt like a soulless show. And it's very sterile. Like, I didn't feel like the show was samey, but I did think it was soulless. There was just no energy, even when the guys were working hard. And for that reason, I can't really give it thumbs up. Because if I give a thumbs up, it has to be something that I would actually recommend people go see.
Right. But I also there was nothing blow away to make you go out of your way to see.
No, there's nothing even approaching a great match. Having said that, there's no way this is a thumbs down show. You know, so I mean, there just wasn't. I mean, there was nothing on the show that was offensively bad. I would say there was three matches that I thought were pretty good, which is not really that bad. And I missed the opener, which was by all counts a pretty good match, probably four. So I'm going to say thumbs in the middle. You know, if you do watch this, I would take Will's advice and probably turn the sound off for a lot of the show, because it's less depressing. But,
yeah, that's true.
You know, this was I thought it was a decent show that probably would have felt like a pretty good show if it was in the promotion that had any juice at all.
Or if they were in England, you know, really. Because, you know, their England shows are always hot. That's where that EC3 Spud match happened. If they were in England, this would have been a hot show. And we've been praising it. And those good matches might have felt great because of the crowd energy. And I'm not really a big crowd energy guy. I can watch matches on mute. You know, I've done it a lot just because of circumstances, whether my wife was sleeping or the kids were sleeping or, you know, I was in a place where I had to be quiet, you know. So I can watch matches with no sound on. It's just when you have the sound on and it feels like the sound's off, it's pretty sad, man.
Yeah, it is sad.
But having said that, I don't feel bad for TNA, because fuck TNA.
You can't feel bad for this company. It's not. I do feel bad for a lot of the people who are there, and especially guys who, you know, the guys who I really feel bad for are guys like EC3, who have already been through the WWE system, and I have a feeling it would be very hard for them to ever get back there.
Right.
You know, like, because he's way too talented to be a nobody. I mean, he's one of the better heels in pro wrestling. He's got a good look. He's a good worker. You know, he's good on the mic. And yet he's sitting where he's sitting and has probably no chance of ever getting back to WWE again.
But you know what? To me, that's not even a guarantee for success anyway. Because that something that's really plaguing all of these companies has been questionable booking. Bad shows.
That's true.
Characters not actually fitting into what their characters should be. I mean, dude, with ROH, we brought up Jay Lethal. man, I sat through 4 hours of TV tapings and the last pay-per-view. Man, there's no way, one, either Jay Lethal should be champion, or two, he should be a heel. You know, if you're going to act like a babyface and wrestle like a babyface, then be a freaking babyface. Same thing with Seth Rollins. And with EC3, like, TNA has always been what I call a heel company. They've always liked the heel. And I hate that philosophy. Yes, it worked with the territories. It doesn't work. You should have a baby face that fends off all challengers.
Yeah,
I'll fight anybody who disagrees with me on that. You need a hot baby face that can fend off challengers as your drawing card. I don't mind heel champions for a few months, but it really needs to be just so that hot baby face can get their win back.
Yeah, there's no national promotion that I know of, like a promotion that was actually a national promotion that has succeeded with a heel on top. You know, you could say Flair, but the reality is Crockett ultimately didn't succeed.
That's true. And Flair was hot at a time when it looked like multiple people could easily knock Flair off.
Yeah.
And the sad thing about Crockett, though, at the time, and I'm sure, did y'all talk about this on the Death of Crockett, where, you know, ultimately you'd have the hot baby face, even Ronnie Garvin, who won the title in 87, you knew he was going to lose it right back to Flair 3 months later.
Yep.
So you kill the thing. It's not like he was going to lose the belt to Arn or Tully or Luger or Windham or whoever. No, he was going to lose it to Flair. So there was no intrigue there. Same thing like with Nikita. I always argue that when the superpowers formed, just to make everybody walk away from the stadium in a feel-good mood, Nikita should have won at Starrcade 86. Let Flair win it back a month later or 6 months later, but he should have been there right afterwards.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all.
I think that these companies could learn from the past and start promoting baby faces. We've seen in ROH they have baby faces. I think WWE could have a real simple fix if you put a baby face with the title, you know, and I don't think it has to be Roman Reigns. It doesn't have to be John Cena, even though he's the most likely candidate. It just needs to be somebody that the crowd can get behind, that make your shows feel interesting and energizes the crowd. I think Ryback would have been a good babyface guy a few years back, but they ruined him.
Yeah, they desperately need that. And, you know, they need guys who work to their gimmick, like you mentioned earlier. I think that's really the point. If you've got a gimmick, you should work to your gimmick. Yeah, times have changed to a degree, but times haven't changed so drastically that, you know, you should have guys who are almost running away from how they're promoted. That should not be what anybody in a big-time pro wrestling company should be doing. You know, if you're that degree of a professional, you should be working to the strengths of your gimmick, not against it. And TNA actually has a top heel who does that, but they have a lot of guys who don't do that. And they've got so many problems at this point. Like, you watch these shows, and it just comes across as totally pointless. Like, whatever you want, like, with Lucha
Underground. No purpose.
Like, with Lucha Underground, right, which was this entirely experimental promotion, and which everybody knew might only last one season. It looks like we're getting a second season, thank God, but we didn't know that. The reality is, you look at Lucha Underground, and you think, this promotion has purpose. Even though you know it might only last a season. The way the show's presented, the way it's laid out, the way it's booked, it felt like a promotion with a purpose. TNA just doesn't feel that way. It's like everything is so schizophrenic. Even when they do book things logically, it still somehow doesn't work because there's no urgency and there's no reason to be invested in the characters.
Dude, too little, too late.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just sad. I just wish there was a place these guys could go. You know, I wish there was a place these guys could go where they could make decent money. And some of them will make good money on the indies. They will. Because you can make more money on the indies now than ever if you're smart with it and if you have if you know how to promote yourself and book yourself, but not all of them. You know, a lot of them are going to have problems, and I'm just hoping that it doesn't discourage some of these people who are frankly very talented people. I mean, like a guy like EC3, you know, I would hate to see him just sort of walk away from the business. You know, I mean, he's too good. But I don't know where he goes from here.
Yeah, and the sad thing about that, Dylan, is my contention has always been, and I'm not going to back down from this, is that when wrestling companies are so bad that they make wrestling itself as an art form look bad, that it's better not to have the company at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
I've caught a lot of flack for that. I know people are like, no, it's good these guys have jobs. Man, I'm not trying to put anybody out of a job, but I'm also not trying to kill off wrestling as an art form I love. And I think actively bad wrestling promotions, WCW in its last few years, TNA throughout its entire existence, it makes wrestling look third rate. WWE at its worst. It makes wrestling look like a joke that all the non-wrestling fans seem to think it is anyway. You know? And
yeah,
that's kind of why I want TNA to go out of business. So guys like Galloway and Hardy and EC3, maybe they can get on with some other company and actually draw more than 200 people and draw 500, 600, 800 people and get paid. You know? Because this company also has an act for not paying their talent.
Yeah, and the reality is, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. You know, there could be a situation like with the way shakeups have happened with WWE and the way they're sort of working with people that were outside their purview even just a year ago. You know, I guess it's possible that people could end up there. Or it could be a situation like we saw in Japan when the promotion sort of changed up and you had freelancers. And like you have in Mexico now, where some of the biggest stars in Mexican and Lucha Libre are people that are unaffiliated with CMLL or AAA. You know, I mean, you know, somebody like, L.A. Park, who kind of screwed the pooch recently, but the point is, he's one of the biggest stars in Lucha Libre, you know. Maybe we'll get to a point where that happens in the United States because there's no other alternative. And I, to be honest with you, I think that's preferable than having a husk of a company that was never good in the first place continue on like a zombie company, just sort of eating and killing the careers of everybody in their wake. I don't think that's good.
The sad thing is that I think the fans of TNA, I fear for them more than I do the wrestlers, man, because there are some people out there that just cannot accept the fact that this company sucks as a whole.
Oh, there are absolutely some people, some TNA fans that are legitimately, and I say this without a hint of humor in my voice, they're legitimately dangerous to themselves and society and should be institutionalized. Like, some of these people are absolutely scary, frightening people. Like, the reason that we actually have mental health facilities. We saw it after the spike debacle went down. We've seen it with subsequent reporting, and you know, we've seen it, and it's all sort of drummed up and encouraged by the inside of TNA crazies, people like Billy Corgan or the real nutcase, completely mentally disturbed lunatic Bob Ryder.
Dude, I was gonna get to that. Fuck Bob Ryder.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they encourage this stuff. You know, I mean, in the case of Bob Ryder, I almost understand it because this is a guy who has no discernible skills and no abilities whatsoever, and pretty much his only ability to sustain himself and his, you know, $8,000 to $9,000 food budget a month is by latching on to somebody and being a succubus. He has no other skill set at all.
That's hilarious.
So, that's all he's got. So I, in a way, almost can't even fault him other than the fact that he's just a contemptible person who shouldn't exist.
Right.
But they egg these people on, and it's like, man, there's some unstable fucking TNA fans. I really don't think you should be egging these people on. Like, these are the kind of people that legitimately scare me in terms of how, like, devoted to the point of absurdity. It is quite literally dangerous in some cases. I mean, some of the things, some of the threats that people have gotten, some of the statements they've made about people like Dave Meltzer and his family. It's fucking scary.
Yeah, and we're not guys. I mean, I like Meltzer as a personality. We're not guys that agree with Meltzer. We're not Meltzerites that, you know, worship his every word. But man, that guy has to be the most trusted word in wrestling journalism out there. And to question a guy who, for the most part, reports what he needs to report. I know we could argue if, you know, he should have reported certain stories where he kind of protected guys from getting fired or, you know, from hurting people's personal lives. I don't even have a problem with that, you know, because he made a moral judgment. But, man, I mean, just the vitriol with which Dave has gotten for reporting honestly about this company has been ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely insane. They're just they're just fucking scary people, man. Some of them are like, you know, you expect like Buffalo Bill types. I don't even know. Like just
well,
really frightening people.
Well, let's hope the girl gets rescued at the end and gets pulled out of the well. And Buffalo Bill gets locked up or shot or whatever. Well, he got shot at the end, right?
Cleary shoots him. In this iteration, we'll just feed him to Bob Ryder. It'll be Bob Ryder's last meal.
Oh, shit. At least the puppy lived, right? That's cool. Anyway, man, I think we're going to end it on that note. For everybody who's listening to this, if you enjoyed the show, cool, because I had no intentions of doing the show. It was on a whim. I know Dylan is the only other person sick enough. We asked Pete and Chris to do it, and they're like, no way. No way I'm watching TNA. I was like, okay. For Chris, I know he was recording one of his 400 different podcasts that you can find here on Place to Be. And Pete, he just wanted nothing to do with TNA. He's the biggest Young Bucks indie fan out there. But man,
he was getting somebody's autograph.
He was trying to fit into his Young Bucks tights with the fringe and the. Yeah. Anyway, all right, Dylan, we'll talk to you later. And for everyone out there, we'll see you on Wednesday because we're going to review NXT's TakeOver. So bye-bye.